Welcome. Today, I'm so happy to introduce you to my friend and colleague, Mandy Henderly, who lives near Asheville, North Carolina. And I've known Mandy for a little while now in a pretty close relationship, and I had no idea about what she shared today. It is so interesting to me how we can know people and interact with them and be in deep relationship and really not know really important things about them. I find this a fascinating thing that we're walking around in the schools, in the shopping centers, we're doing things with other people in the community, and we really are missing huge parts of who they are and what has happened to them in this life. Because we're seeing them in the present moment, in the form that they're in now. We don't often think about, oh, I wonder what it was like when they were 10 or 13 or 16 or 20. What have they been through in their life? How have they come to be who they are? And I think anytime we get the chance to have that kind of emotional intimacy with one another, to really hear each other's stories, to understand the suffering that each of us has been through, how we came through that suffering. I think that's a good day for humanity. And I really am trying my best to focus on those types of deep connections in my life recently, getting off social media as much as possible. Not doom scrolling. I actually took TikTok off my phone, everybody. I don't have TikTok anymore because I'm making a conscious effort to connect with real people in real time that I care about, getting to know them intimately and what they've been through, to have compassion and empathy for all that they've been through. I think if we all made a conscious effort to just do that for a few years, I think that could transform humanity. We've gotten away from that. So I am happy to introduce you to Mandy Henderly to hear a story that is very precious, very sacred, and I feel so grateful that she was willing to share it with us. All right, let's go meet Mandy.
Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. In 2025, we have decided that we want to turn this podcast over to the audience. Yes, you, the listener. We want you to come on. This is not going to be all about the experts and everyone who's ever written a book in yoga or yoga therapy or Ayurveda. We want to hear your story of healing. How did yoga therapy, or Ayurveda help you to heal yourself from the inside out? And that's not to say that we can't also use Western allopathic medicine, but there's something different about yoga and how it helps us to heal. And I would love for you to be a guest to come on the podcast. You can contact me and we will get you set up. So the entire year of 2025, we are looking for stories of people like you. It's your time to shine. Come join us and be a guest on the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. Welcome, Mandy. Thank you for being here today.
Hi, Amy. It's good to be here.
Mandy, why don't you tell our audience where you live and where you're coming from?
I live in Hendersonville, North Carolina. It's about 30 minutes away from Asheville, North Carolina.
So I know I'm curious. I read little tidbits in the news, but what is going on in Asheville? Just momentarily, if we can take a tiny detour since the big storm and so many people losing their homes. Is the cleanup coming along? Is it slow? What's happening there?
So I'm a little bit removed from being in Hendersonville. A lot of the worst damage happened around Asheville in an area called the River Arts District, and also north of Asheville in small towns like Marshall, North Carolina, people might have heard of, and Swannanoa in North Carolina. So those areas are still really, really struggling. And a lot of small businesses around Asheville are, struggling because when the storm happened, there really wasn't any tourism happening in the month of October, which is historically like their biggest month for tourism. Everybody likes to come down here and see the beautiful leaves.
Yeah.
So taking that hit, yeah, it was big for them.
Ugh, well, I just want everyone to still keep Asheville on their minds, knowing that these kinds of tragedies, just like we're seeing in California with the fires, there's years of devastation and cleanup, both as a community and as an individual and a family. So, all right, Mandy. Well, today we are going to talk about your story and how you came to yoga, what the reasons were for coming to yoga, what you discovered once you got here. Why don't we take you all the way back to, I think you said you were 13 years old. Mm-hmm. What was going on when you were 13?
Yeah, when I was 13, I started having these really horrible headaches that happened mostly in the back of my head. And sometimes these headaches would be so bad that I would throw up and have dry heaves, even if I didn't have food on my stomach. It was a really horrible time. My mom and my grandma, when my mom had to work, would take me to these doctor's appointments. And then the doctors would tell me, oh, maybe she hit her head and doesn't remember it. Oh, maybe she has the flu that's going around. Maybe she's making it up for attention. So this happened for months until finally it was bad enough that I believe my grandma had taken me to the appointment that day. It was like, you're getting this girl a CAT scan. Like something is not right. So several days
later, I just say leave it to grandma to go in there and set the record straight here. Like we are not leaving this place.
Yes. So several days later, I went to the children's hospital with my mom, had a CAT scan, and then never left. They found, I believe it was golf ball size brain tumor in the back of my head. It was in my cerebellum. And so from there, you know, just got swept up to the oncology floor because nobody knew, you know, is this cancerous or not? I had one surgery to drain the spinal fluid because the tumor was stopping the spinal fluid from flowing. So that's what was causing me to throw up. And then after that, they were able to do another surgery to remove the tumor.
Wow. And
then, yeah.
So I don't know if you can even remember, because this may be like a medical trauma that you went into freeze state. But do you remember what it felt like to be a little 13-year-old woman?
Yeah, I remember it being really scary. And I remember when I first was in my hospital room and I met my neurosurgeon, I remember getting really mad at him because he told me, look, we're going to have to shave your head to do all of this. And I started to cry. And he told me, you know, basically to stop crying. And I got pretty mad about it, you know, because I was 13 and I had this curly hair that I had just started to figure out, you know, what the right way to handle it was. And then you're here telling me like, this is what's going to happen and you need to stop crying and just get over it.
Oh,
yeah.
Oof. I just got a little wave of sadness for that, little girl. Mm. So looking back now as a grown woman who is a yoga therapist and has, you know, studied so many things about the nervous system and trauma response, do you think that you were in fight, flight, freeze, any of these states, all of these states?
I definitely, yeah, I think I was in a freeze state looking back on it. I was, you know, dissociating. I wasn't really telling anybody what my feelings were. I wasn't expressing myself. Except for that moment where I got mad at my neurosurgeon for telling me that he was going to have to shave my head. I really was kind of just like, oh, okay, you're telling me that I need to go get another MRI. Okay, wheel me out. It's okay. You know, I was just freezing. I was dissociating. And now I know that that was survival response. I was freezing and dissociating because that's what I needed to do at the time.
Isn't that beautiful that our nervous system will help to care for us in that way? I mean, as horrible as it feels, and as much as we need to take the time to heal from that, at the time, it's actually a useful strategy that the nervous system is helping us get through these really hard times.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask you, because I've only known you with straight hair. After they shaved your head, did the curly hair ever come back, or were you straight haired after that?
No, it's still curly. If I grew it out, it would be curly.
Okay, so you have gotten to work with your curly hair since then.
Yeah.
All right. So take us forward a few years. Now you've gotten through the brain tumor. You've found out it was not cancerous, thankfully, so you didn't have to have all the chemo and radiation. But that's not to say a golf ball sized benign tumor isn't a big deal, right? But thankfully, you didn't have to go through the whole cancer journey also. So now you're 16. And what kind of important thing happened when you were 16?
Yeah, so when I was around 15 or 16, I knew that I needed to be moving my body more. I had been a lap swimmer on swim team, and that was really the only kind of sport that I loved to do, and I still love to swim. But swimming doesn't last all year long. You've got one specific season, maybe two if you join like a summer league. So I rented yoga DVDs at the time because that's when Madonna was going through her like Ray of Light era, studying Kabbalah and also practicing yoga. And she had these amazing arms, and I wanted to have arms like Madonna. So I started dabbling in yoga. Like I said, I don't think it was even DVDs at the time. It was probably VHS. And there was also this yoga teacher that I loved who did like a 6 a.m. hatha yoga on PBS. So sometimes I would get up really early and do her hatha yoga routine on PBS.
Was that Lily Esfolin? Do you think? Do you remember?
If I heard her voice, I would recognize her voice because she had this beautiful British accent.
Okay. We'll have to figure out who that was.
Yes. Yeah.
My first yoga exposure was Jane Fonda on VHS.
Okay.
The yoga confessions are happening today.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I really like this. And it didn't feel competitive to me, which, you know, was another reason why I loved swimming, because yes, you're on a team, but you're really only competing against yourself once you're in the water. So yoga gave me that same feeling of I'm not competing. This is really just for me. Even though at the time I was doing purely for the physical aspects, wanting to get those arms like Madonna. Now, as an adult, I can look back and be like, oh, I was trying to reconnect with my body. I had been dissociated, and moving in a gentle way through these yoga practices helped me to come back into my body and reconnect.
It's just so interesting. I've never really thought about this before, strangely, but think about all the kids who've gone through medical trauma, like millions of them, and maybe their parents, or maybe they don't discover yoga or some other somatic based practices, right? Maybe it could be Tai Chi, maybe it could be somatic experiencing. So it doesn't just have to be yoga, but I think the parents oftentimes are not even aware that disassociation is happening for the kids in the medical system.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably happening to the parents too, and they don't even recognize it. So it seems to me like it would be so amazing for parents and kids, family yoga, for families that are going through big medical things and helping them realize, look, your nervous system has gone into fight, flight, freeze. It's protecting you. but it has this added bonus of making you disembodied for long periods of time if you don't reconnect things. That's a great idea. Maybe you should do that, Mandy. Because it's your story too. Do you remember your mom and your grandma, if they were traumatized at all by your health conditions?
Yeah, I definitely know that it was hard on my mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that it was. And so, yeah, I think that she probably had her own struggles with it for sure.
Did you realize when you were 16 and started doing yoga that, oh, I'm disembodied and now I'm starting to come back into sensations? Because I didn't really understand that concept till I was in my 40s. Like, I knew I liked yoga. I knew it felt good. I knew, like, wow, something different happened than happens when I run or, you know, do other things. And I'd go to the teacher and say, what's happening? What's the mechanism? I didn't even know there was a nervous system involved, you know, when I first started yoga. And nobody could answer the questions. We've come so far since then with our yoga knowledge and our nervous system knowledge. But did you know, like, wow, I feel more embodied?
No, there's no way that at 16, I could have put words on it like that.
Right.
I think I felt probably healthier. I think I probably felt more energy. I probably felt a little bit stronger, but I don't think that I would have been able to say I feel embodied now or I connected to my body. It's only as an adult that I can look back and name that.
And I think that's also so healing to go back and revisit this whole thing that happened to you in this lifetime, maybe through meditation or breath work or, you know, yoga nidra, and kind of reprocess it, redigest it, and now have words for what happened and words for the healing that happened. Like, do you find that comforting at all to have some understanding about what happened to you as a young woman?
Yeah, it definitely is very comforting to have words for things now. During 2021, I was having a really hard time with the pandemic and how it was affecting my kids' school. And then what that meant for me when they couldn't go to school. So, for example, my daughter was in preschool, and I felt like every other week, they were having to close her class for quarantine because somebody had been exposed. You know, the rules kept changing. And it was very hard on me to try to figure out a schedule for myself because I was starting to teach yoga. And I felt like things kept changing. And where do I fit in all of this? How can I try to build this career for myself? And I did a EFT tapping session.
Emotional freedom technique.
Yes, I did a tapping session, and the facilitator for the session asked about childhood trauma. And I was like, no, I don't have any. And then a moment later, I was like, I don't know if this counts, but this is what happened to me when I was a kid.
No, it doesn't count. That's nothing.
And she was like, yeah, it does count. And it makes sense that your brain is like compartmentalizing it over here because it's trying to keep you safe. It's doing its job. So ever since that session, I feel like talking about what happened to me as a kid and thinking about it, naming it, has really cracked open in a good way, where I'm not compartmentalizing it. I'm giving myself permission to go into it more.
It's so interesting how emotionally digesting it with the wisdom of being a grown woman and getting to articulate and name it, you know, that's so helpful to reprocess it. And then, I don't know if you've found this, but there is a point where we don't, in yoga at least, want to get overly identified with our suffering. Mm-hmm. We can process it and then put it in its proper place in an integrated way and inside of our body, mind, and spirit. And it becomes an integrated part of us, but it's no longer a big focus of ours. And it's not an identity that we have on. Do you feel that too? It's kind of counter to what you just said, but have you been working towards that?
Yeah, I do feel like it is an integrated part of me now. Like I'm able to be an advocate for myself when I go to the doctor or any healthcare provider, but also not have a guard up, you know, where I don't want to listen to anything that they have to say. I'm able to have this conversation with you and go in depth with my experience, but not like start crying or eject.
Yeah. Well, I am glad you're here. I'm glad that you've had this opportunity in life to integrate it and make it part of who you are as a mother, as a wife, as a daughter, as a granddaughter, as a yogini. So let's come into the time now, what you're doing every day, how your yoga is still a big part of your life.
My yoga practice has really evolved so much from being a part of the optimal state. So this time last year, I had started the program. My yoga practice was like several hot yoga classes a week. I was teaching hot power flow. I was doing like the short form Ashtanga sequence on my days when I was doing a home practice. Over time, all of that has shifted. So my practice is a therapeutic practice that my mentor has assigned to me. I do that almost every single day. I love to, like I said, go swimming. That's where I really get my physical hard exercise, is going to swim laps. And my yoga practice supports my mental health.
I find that so amazing that you were able to transition to a therapeutic practice, because so many of us who've been athletic, it's almost like we want to make sure we get a workout in as well as our mental health, as well as if we want some spiritual connection, and we want to do it all at once. And so that transition to say, yeah, I'm going to go get a workout, get my heart rate up, you know, feel good and strong in my body. And I'm going to possibly do a little more breath work, a little more meditation, a little maybe more gentle asana, if that's appropriate for my yoga practice. I think a lot of people, that's a hard jump. Maybe it's just because of the number of hours in the day and it's hard to fit both of those things in. But so when you say that it's helping with your mental health, can you tell us a little bit about that? What your daily practice, without getting into specific details if you don't want to, but like, I think even the idea that yoga can help people with their mental health is a little bit out there for some people.
Yeah, so my yoga practice really supports my mental well-being through slowing down. So many of us live lives where we're just going, going, going. And for me, the practice of yoga helps me to ground, and it helps me to come back to my center. We talk a lot in the optimal state about Purusha, so like soul or your essence, something that is always there. It really helps me to connect with that still point inside.
My name is Amy Wheeler. I'm the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour, but also the creator of a mobile app that's based on the gunas of yoga and Ayurveda. It's the first of a kind, and we'd love for you to try it for free. The app is called The Optimal State, and it tracks the state of your gunas, and then it gives you therapeutic interventions. Now we're starting to add Dharma Talks as well as Yoga Nidra. And we think these are wonderful ways that you can do some self-care and take care of yourself on a regular basis. So come join us, the Optimal State app. We'd love to see you over there too.
I love what you said, all of it, but especially like the slowing down.
Yeah.
I got a practice from my teacher in India last night. It's her morning time and my evening time. And the pace at which she taught me last night was almost embarrassing to me, because I am just moving so fast. And she was asking me six count inhale, six count exhale, like, you know, like really being present, slowing down, not rushing through, just the act of doing asana and breath work and meditative type exercises at that slow pace made me aware of how fast my mind has been going. And so I love that you said that about slowing down for our mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So one of your pearls of wisdom that you shared with me earlier, you said there's a mantra that another teacher had shared with you that you love, and it is, when life ebbs, I flow. Can you say anything more about that?
Yeah. So this other yoga teacher, or fellow yoga teacher, I should say, Jess Kinnett, I believe is her last name. She shared this mantra, when life ebbs, I flow. And I really feel that encapsulates what yoga does for me. Life is always going to have its ebbs and flows, right? It's always going to have peaks and valleys. Just because we practice yoga, it doesn't take away those peaks and valleys, but it does help you to move through them with a little more grace than maybe you might have without practicing yoga.
Yeah, I love that. I think Patanjali says the external experience and events are not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
But the internal perception and internal resource to deal with what's happening outside, that will shift through yoga. And I think that's such an important thing to think about. I think sometimes we don't realize that that is actually where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have control over the outside.
Right.
And will that fix all the problems out there? No, it won't. It will only bring a more stable, kind, centered version of you to that problem.
Right.
And I truly believe that that actually does have an effect on the external.
Absolutely.
I mean, we can't fix everything, but we can fix our presence in the difficult times.
Yes, it gives you like a kind of clarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So another thing that you said that I'd love for you to talk a little bit about, you said, I'm just a normal person with a family and responsibilities to navigate, yet I'm able to integrate yoga into my daily life because I'm not seeking perfection. Please tell us about that. So many of us are trying to be perfect out there.
So many of us are trying to be perfect. And then that robs us of having a good experience with life because of seeking perfection. Perfection is never going to exist.
It robs us of the present moment because we're always striving for the next thing. And when I get there, when I'm enough, when I have enough money, when I look a certain way, when I have enough friends, like, what about now? What about this moment with your kids while you're making dinner?
Right. I think the integration part just comes in with being able to accept, this is what I have today. I have 5 minutes where I can do alternate nostril breathing, or maybe it is the full 15-minute practice that my mentor gave me. And that is not a hot, sweaty flow that I was used to doing this time last year. And it still is yoga. Like, I don't have to always spend an hour on the mat to have it be a yoga practice. My yoga could just be 5 minutes, 15 minutes in my pajamas, in my dirty office. It doesn't have to look like perfection.
I mean, when I hear you say that, what comes to mind is, well, that is the yoga, meaning being able to be okay in a dirty office in your pajamas for 10 minutes because you have to go run and get the kids. Like, you're actually practicing yoga in life, I mean, as well as on the mat. But that ability, I mean, I'm guilty of this, Mandy. I like to, like, if I want to do a practice, I want to clean my space before I do my practice. And we don't always have time for that, right? Sometimes it just has to show up how it shows up. And yeah. I think there's a, no matter how short, that awareness of, wow, here is where I am today. I'm resisting my practice, or gosh, I feel kind of anxious, or I really don't want to do this, or my brain is on 100 other things while I'm trying to do some breath work. Like, that's so valuable. It doesn't mean it wasn't a good practice. That self-awareness that is built in, wow, this is the third day in a row I've been anxious. I wonder if I really shouldn't have so much coffee in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one other thing that you said that I loved, I don't know if you remember, you wrote all these a long time ago, so you're probably like, wow.
I don't remember any of what I wrote down.
Just so good. I want to share it. So you said, I'm just trying to get a little bit closer to sattva every day. What does that mean to you? Some people don't even know what sattva is. So how does sattva feel in your body, mind?
Yeah. So to me, sattva feels like I'm grounded. I have a little bit of calmness, but also alert. Like I can get stuff done, but it's not frenetic. I love the feeling of getting out of the pool and feeling my heart rate coming down after it's just been elevated for a certain amount of time. Like that to me feels very sattvic. And I love the optimal states approach to yoga practices because I believe this is written in the material. All practices lead to sattva.
Ideally.
Ideally, right? Yeah.
Or maybe we just realize how not in sattva we are one some days. But I love that because so much of my early yoga experience, like you, in terms of really hard practices, and actually left me either really in rajas, kind of feeling jacked up for a couple of hours and, you know, running around like a power bunny. And other times I would go up so high that I would crash and I would totally fall asleep in Shavasana and then drag myself out of the studio for a few hours feeling so kind of like, whoa, I don't know if I can get my stuff done today, right? So this idea that, you know, towards the end of the practice and then going back into our lives that we would have that clear, calm, alert, balanced state of mind and body. That's kind of what we want. That's what the Bhagavad Gita talks about. That's what the Yoga Sutra talks about. And it's a little different than a lot of Western yoga. And at the same time, I'll admit, you and I both came to yoga from a very physical place. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing. We got in the door, you know?
And I'll tell you, Amy, too, like, even though this is where I'm at now, doing a therapeutic practice and really slowing down, it took me a long time to accept that that's what I needed to do. Before the optimal state, I did a foundational 200-hour program, and then I did a 300-hour program with a school called Virabhava Yoga based in Sri Vidya Tantra. And their approach was very similar to what the optimal states approach is to asana. We're going to do two or three, maybe up to five asanas, and we're going to go slow. And I was just like, I'm not doing this. Like, I was so resistant. I was like butting my head up against the wall. I did not want to adjust or change anything. I was like, I'm a yoga person, and that is the identity that I'm wearing. And to be a yoga person, that means that I have to do X, Y, and Z, go to a 60-minute practice. It has to be hot. I have to sweat, da, 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 da. And so really getting to the point where accepting and loving a therapeutic practice, it's been a journey.
I am so with you. I remember the first slow, more gentle class I went to. I was so obnoxious. I didn't know any better. I just kept looking around the room like, when are we going to start? What's going on here? Why is she making us do these things? Like, I totally did not get what we were doing. And I was one of those obnoxious people that was like, when are we going to start working out, lady?
Yeah.
I didn't say that to her, thankfully, but you know, that was my kind of attitude. And I've told this story before that I didn't really want to do yoga like that. And then a couple of years later, when my neck was so tight, I couldn't even turn my head to look at the passing lane when I was driving my car. Like, that's how tight my neck was. I couldn't look back behind my shoulder. I was like, oh, maybe I should go try that slow, gentle stuff again and see if I can help my neck. And that was the time that I got it. I was like, oh, this is a value. So I think it just takes us time to even slow down enough to appreciate it. I'm trying to think what, was I avoiding my life? Like, what was, I can't even remember, honestly. Like, what was all that striving and pushing about? Do you have any ideas about that?
I think I was just really attached to the identity.
Okay.
That was my experience. I was just really attached to my way of doing things, my way of approaching a yoga practice, and what it said about me as a person.
Yeah, I remember wanting yoga to help me be thin too. I remember that was like a big motivator for me at that time.
Right.
So, where do you go from here? Do you have any thoughts about where you'd like to take your teachings and learnings, and what kind of business types of things have you had a chance to reflect on where you want to go next?
Yeah, I have. I spent a lot of time over the Christmas holidays and New Year's thinking about what I would like my yoga therapy business to be. And I really would like to focus on yoga for mental health. I have one psychiatry practice that I contract with, and I see a private clients through them, and I want to build up more partnerships like that. I also have offerings through my website that people can purchase and book with me virtually. I really have so much interest in and passion for yoga therapy for mental health, mental well-being. I think that after the COVID-19 pandemic, there has just been a lot. It was like a rubber band that got stretched, and then that rubber band just isn't going to come back to the exact same shape that it was before.
That rubber band is broken. I think for the first couple of years of the pandemic, we held on to hope that when things get back to normal. And now I think we've all realized, oh,
There's
this is
no
normal.
normal. Yeah.
Yeah, this is it now. I mean, with the advancements in artificial intelligence and all the things that are happening in the world, like, okay, well, this is the new normal. And how am I going to take care of my mental health in this new normal?
Exactly. And I've been really interested too in like the loneliness epidemic and how that has only increased steadily over time. And we're kind of at this inflection point where loneliness has never been worse. Like it's never been more of a problem in society. And there was this longitudinal study where they studied people for their whole lives, basically. And the number one predictor of early mortality wasn't exercise or their blood pressure or their heart rate or anything like that. It had to do with the quality of their relationships.
Yeah, if I remember, that was a UCLA longitudinal study.
That sounds right. So I really think that with the advancements in AI, that's especially relevant this week with all of the news about DeepSeek.
Yeah.
The need for strong human connections is only going to grow, and the value of those connections is going to be even higher. Yoga therapy has a place in all of that. Developing a one-on-one connection with a yoga therapist who really sees you and hears you and understands you, like, wow. How valuable is that?
Yeah, I am so glad you brought this up because there are going to be so many things that are offered through artificial intelligence, but a true deep human connection cannot be replaced by artificial intelligence. And I actually think it's going to make our work even more valuable. And yes, there will be AI companies that, just like they've done for psychotherapy, you can have your GPT chat yoga therapist. I'm sure that will happen. Just like my GPT chat psychotherapist, it's some ideas. It's like, oh, that's an interesting way to look at it. Where's my real human that I need to actually sit with and breathe with and look in their eyes and be seen, be heard. So I think our services will become even more valuable because of that presence.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, an AI can't co-regulate with you.
Thank you. I love that. You should make a t-shirt that says that on the back. Co-regulation doesn't happen with AI. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Well, thank you, Mandy. How about your website? Where can people find you? How can they reach out to you if they'd like to work with you, like to connect with you, like to co-regulate with you?
Yes, I would love to co-regulate with you. My website is just mandyhenderly.com. So people can sign up for my newsletter on my website. People can look at what my offers are on my website. I'm on Instagram at Mandy Henderly Yoga. And I would love
she has really great things on Instagram, by the way. She has the latest videos.
And if it's okay, I would love to shout out a couple of things that aren't mine, but that I think people should know about. Is that okay?
I love that. I love that, Mandy. Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So I would love to just shout out this organization in Asheville called Beloved Asheville. They do great work. They're doing so much for the community after Hurricane Helene. I would also love to shout out Vira Bhava Yoga.
I'll get that one up here in a minute.
And Vira Bhava Yoga is also on my website as somebody that I partner with, but Vira Bhava Yoga offers a 200-hour course and a 300-hour course, as well as some standalone courses that people can take for continuing education units. And Vira Bhava has recently changed to a teacher-owned cooperative, a teacher-owned co-op. And I think it's like the first of its kind, really, in the yoga world. So I'm really excited to continue to be a part of Vira Bhava.
You know, I love that idea. I think that is the future, because for any of us to have our own brick and mortar with, you know, our own sign over the door, it's the overhead is so expensive, whether you're doing it digitally or, you know, in a brick and mortar. It just makes sense that we should collectively come together and share expenses, because we don't need to be there 24/7.
Right.
I love that. And, you know, I think we've talked about this. Yeah, there's some challenges with collectives, but there's challenges with everything in life.
Exactly. Yeah. And I really think that the cooperative model, the collective model, is really embodying that ethos of we all rise together.
Yes, 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 yes. I love that. All right, Mandy. Well, thank you for being here with us today and sharing that vulnerable story that I didn't even know about you. I've known you for quite a while now, and I had no idea. It's always fun to discover new things. And thank you for your authenticity. I think that's really the thing that I love about you so much, is you show up so authentically, and I really appreciate that. It gives me permission to do the same.
Well, thank you, Amy. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Mandy, for being here today, for sharing yourself with us, your authentic self, giving all of us permission to show up just as we are without needing to put on a mask or try to be perfect. You know, Mandy and I were laughing recently about, you know, getting out of the swimming pool and just looking like something the cat dragged in, and seeing people in our towns in that state, and that's okay too. You know, this willingness to show up as a real human who looks and acts and talks and feels different every single day, all throughout the day. So thank you, Mandy, for coming. And then the other thing I wanted to just say a little note about is that the whole reason we created the Optimal State mobile app, which is on Android and iPhone, is to help people get a tiny bit closer to sattva every single day, where you can kind of check in with yourself, determine if you're feeling in or out of balance, get a tiny little intervention to help you, a 5-minute little thing that might help you shift into a state of more well-being and feeling at ease, and then go about your day and continue on. So if you're interested, go to the app stores, type in Optimal State, and I think you'll see a wonderful app that is based on yoga, Ayurveda, and the gunas for both the assessments as well as the interventions. All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We are really, really blessed to have you all as listeners. We can feel the energy coming back, the gratitude, and we want you to know how much we appreciate you out there in the audience. Every little bit of goodness that we share with you from our guests goes into your ears, down into your heart. I am hopeful that it radiates out into the world. That is the goal. So thank you for being our dependable and reliable listeners. You have no idea how much we appreciate seeing those downloads every single week. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.